Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. We've got a fun episode for you today because I have been abroad in Australia and New Zealand in the last 2 weeks and have watched about 30 minutes of basketball over that time. So I'm going to need my two trusty co-hosts to fill me in on everything that I missed, and then we're going to discuss each of the second round series moving forward. We're also going to talk about some front office overhauls in the Eastern Conference and whether the Knicks should consider trading Kristaps Porzingis. Before we get underway, just wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can find us on iTunes as well, so it'd be great if you subscribed, downloaded, left some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. You'll find lots of great playoff coverage. We've got the draft lottery coming up, so we'll have some draft content coming out there too. So check them out, FanRag Sports, at FanRag Sports, and at FanRag NBA. As always, I'm joined by my two trusty co-hosts, Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
Well-oiled machine. Jesus, we did not have that going for us last week, Sarah.
No, we didn't. And I love that he calls us trusty because he's going to count on us to catch him up. I don't think either of us watched very much basketball this week either.
Not particularly.
So this should go really well.
My bachelor's project.
Yeah. I've been working like crazy too. So this will go really smoothly, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, you guys were not 14 hours ahead of Eastern Conference time.
This is
so
true.
I think Eastern Conference time, Eastern time zone. Apologies in advance, everyone, because I'm also
just
super
6 hours.
Jet-lagged. Yeah. I know, Mort, I have way more respect for you following basketball now, because it's impossible over there. It's crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
All right, so let's start with probably the most entertaining of the four second-round series going on right now, the Celtics-Wizards brouhaha. We had a feeling that this would turn ugly quickly, just based on, you know, they had that regular season rivalry going on. They had that weird funeral game that the Wizards hosted. Did not take long for this one to also get some hostility involved. It sounds like, guys, Isaiah Thomas, he lost a tooth. Am I right? That's yeah. All I saw from all the headlines was just, does Isaiah Thomas have a tooth? Or did he leave a game because he's now missing a tooth again? So what happened there? Where was that an intentional thing or was it an accident?
I think it was an accident, but look, the medical reports on Isaiah has been pretty weird. Then suddenly it was reported he had a broken jaw.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Then they announced he didn't have a broken jaw. It's really weird. Like, what's up with Isaiah? Nobody really knows except that he's missing a tooth.
Okay. So he got it knocked out again in game three, right? But then he is now, is he going to like play with the fake tooth again, or is he just going toothless the rest of the playoffs, or do we not know?
I'm actually not sure, but I've you know, if I was him, I would probably just go toothless, I would just mean mug people. Mm-hmm. Now
yeah.
just show them that whole like I'm tough as hell, just look at me like I'm playing with one less tooth,
right?
And besides, like, you know what, you don't really need it. He hit for 53 anyway, like,
right?
Everybody's scared of him right now.
Yeah, I was following my game cast at the airport in from New Zealand to back to Sydney, and I was like, oh, it's the fourth quarter, there's 1 minute left, and Isaiah has how many points? Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing I saw was Kelly Oubre and Kelly Olynyk got into a little bit of a brawl. It looked like Olynyk set a hard screen. Oubre did not take kindly. Oubre is now suspended for game four. And then it looked like, I guess, the Wizards... Am I right on this? The Wizards blew... They jumped out to like a 22-5 lead in game one and then lost. And then had a double-digit lead in game two and also lost.
Yeah. Yeah, they started out 16-0 in the first game.
Ooh.
So and then they ended up losing. It was pretty amazing. I was doing my assignment at that point in time, so I was kind of box score watching initially.
Uh-huh.
And I had plans to like turn the game on a little bit later on. And then I saw the score 16-0. I was like, oh, okay, so this one is practically over.
Sure.
You know, 16-point deficit to open the game, that's gonna be impossible. And then I just said, you know, screw it, I'm gonna work on my assignment. And then the game was over and I got like a notification saying Boston beats Washington. I was like, wait, what? They must have you know, typed out that wrong, and I was in. And nope, they did not. That was certainly accurate. Wow. So yeah, Boston fought back, and I caught some of, you know, the game, you know, condensed, and man, they're scrappy, and it seems like they've found some sort of identity in fighting back when down. I mean, look, the Bulls series 0-2, and they come back and win 4 straight. And here they open the 2 games against Washington, being down and fighting back. I don't know if that's their new MO, but it sure as hell is functioning.
So that's going to lead me to my first question about this series moving forward. More, do you think the Celtics, I mean, the Wizards blew their shot at this series already?
No, not necessarily. I mean, at this point, I'm not discounting John Wall for anything. He is just playing out of his mind. 28 a game, over 12 assists, over 2 steals, 2 blocks. You know, he's really running the show. He's just being overshadowed right now by Isaiah and his gaudy numbers. But Washington seems to be extremely solid, and the Game 3 win was huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it was pretty convincing as well. It wasn't, I mean, when I saw the game, I felt like they were in control throughout, more or less. Even then, you know, they had some runs, and Boston had some runs, but the game never really felt, you know, it didn't get away from them. So we'll see how they do in Game 4. I'm a little nervous because I do want this series to go far. Mm-hmm. I want it to go to like 7 games because it's so intense and it's interesting. But so I don't really want Boston to win this one quite yet. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I don't think they're out. I think John Wall is ready. I think he's meshing pretty well with Bradley Beal. Marcin Gortat has found his game again. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to like.
Yeah. And it looked like, so Isaiah had 53 in Game 2, but Game 3 he wasn't all that good from what I saw. I caught about 3 minutes of this game on the plane back from Sydney, but then the signal for the live TV was terrible, so I decided to watch movies instead. So, Sarah, do you think the Wizards figured out something in Game 3, how to slow down Isaiah a little bit?
I don't know. He seems impossible to slow down. That seems to be the consensus. Whether that's because of carrying or not, that's the theory that's out there. No, I don't know if they figured that out. I think something that they can go to is they smashed him in points in the paint. So I would try to continue doing that. Bogdanovich had a good game. Otto Porter, I think, had his best game of the series so far. So hopefully they can get those guys going a little bit. Obviously, they're already thin to begin with. They're going to be a little thinner because Oubre basically got himself kicked out of 2 games, you know, because he went out in the first half of the other one. Was not wise, but yeah, I'd say hopefully they can get some of those shooters going, spread the floor a little bit, and hit them in the paint.
So one question, who is Isaiah guarding in this series? Is he guarding Wall or Beal, or are they putting him on Porter mostly?
I've seen him a little bit on all three a little bit, but okay. Mostly on Wall.
Mostly Wall, okay. So, Mort, how important do you think Oubre's suspension is going to be in Game 4?
It's going to be huge because he's played well, and but here's the thing, though. I actually think it's going to fire up the rest of his teammates because Kelly Olynyk, you know, put a lot of hard screens on him throughout the game in which he was thrown out. It wasn't that one play that did it. It was like 2 or 3 plays before that where he's just hitting him and grabbing him and doing all kinds of weird stuff. Oubre, reacting to that matter is sort of like a necessity because he needs to show people, you know, I'm not one that you could just push around like that. I need to prove myself a little bit tough. And, you know, Washington fed off of that energy. And I could totally see that, like, John Wall using that as motivation for Game 4 as well. Like, you know, this is one of my guys, and he got screwed. Like, that's probably going to be the motive for Washington coming out. So we'll see. But, I would miss the presence of Oubre because he's been shooting well. He's been giving them a presence that he didn't really give them a whole lot of in the regular season. It seems like he's a little bit more playing ready right now. So it has to be more minutes to Bogdanovich, and Otto Porter again would need to, you know, climb back into this series. Like Sarah said, his best game was here in Game 3, And he didn't even hit a three there. Like, he needs to get that outside shot going a little bit and his inside game. So he needs to take a little bit more responsibility for game four, which I think he can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know he's been dealing with back spasms intermittently throughout kind of like the end of the regular season, and I think of the playoffs too. So who knows how much that's affecting him. It did seem like Bogdanovich, most of what I've been doing the last couple of weeks is just following box scores after they happen. And I noticed that Bogdanovich like did not really play. I think he played 8 minutes in game two, which seems like a strange decision. So yeah, I think you guys are onto something that he's going to be needed in game four a lot more. I did see Scotty Brooks even had a quote like he screwed up by playing Bogdanovich so little in game two. But now that Oubre is out, it does seem like he's going to have a much bigger role off the bench.
Yeah.
I want to ask you guys, Mort, you first, what is your updated prediction for this series?
Oh, yeah. I believe I had Washington initially in like six or maybe seven. I don't remember what I actually chose there in terms of games, but I did think Washington. And there's a part of me that wants to maintain that simply because I think that backcourt and the rebounding superiority is going to hang on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so difficult to go against any Isaiah-led team right now.
Right.
And, I mean, look, the fact that the lineup change, you know, with Gerald Green coming in, worked. And it Boston plays small, but they play effectively small right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's really impossible to properly predict their outcome game to game. So I'm going to stick to it with the caveat that Boston right now is scary as hell.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep saying Washington simply because of those advantages, but I feel very much more uncertain about it.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, what about you? Where do you land on this series now?
It's very similar to Morton. I really don't remember what I picked either, but I think I also had like Washington in six.
Mm-hmm.
And like I really still want Washington to pull it off, but like my head is telling me that the Celtics are gonna figure it out. I'd just kind of rather see Cavs Wizards, even though the Cavs have just dismantled everything so far in the playoffs. But I don't know. I think I'll stay Washington as well. Washington in seven.
I like it. Yeah. So I did not have a chance to give a prediction last week, but had I done so, I think a couple weeks ago when we gave our playoff hot takes, my lukewarm take was Washington over Boston in six in this round, which I would have stuck with. But now I'm with you guys. Like, I think I just have no interest in a Cleveland-Boston series. So for that reason, mostly that reason alone, since I haven't actually seen any except for two choppy minutes of this series, I'm going to stick with Washington. I'll go seven, though, because I'm with you. I feel like at this point you cannot doubt Isaiah Thomas at all. It seems like he's just going to... There's nothing he cannot overcome if he's gone through what he's gone through over the last 3 weeks and has come out, you know, firing 53 points at a playoff career high. So let's turn to your Spurs, Sarah. The other... actually interesting second round series. I was telling you guys before we started recording today that I was glad I actually missed last week, because had I been on, I would have probably predicted the Rockets to win this one in six. And then I see game one, you know, it's a 30-point blowout, James Harden goes off, it seems like all their shooters went crazy, Kawhi did not have that much supporting cast in game one, then game two, Kawhi goes nuclear, Harden does the opposite. Unfortunately, the Spurs had a big injury, which we will talk about in a minute. And then game three, it looked like that this is the only game I've seen in like 2 weeks, aside from Bucks Raptors game five, which I watched 5 minutes before falling asleep. I watched all of game three. And, you know, I was hearing that LaMarcus Aldridge was terrible in the first two games, but then naturally the game I see, he's a beast and looks like the best player on the court. So, Sarah, I want to first talk to you about LaMarcus. What did you see from him in those first two games, and what changed in game three?
Well, I didn't see too much in the first two games. It just, honestly, the Rockets just jumped on them from the start in game one, and Spurs never really got anything going. So I think that made it even harder for a guy like LaMarcus, whose game is slower. The Spurs kind of got into a fast game and never were able to slow down and feed him at all. And it just was awful all the way around. It was a horrible game. You know, in game three, they finally got to some things that, honestly, they did a lot of last year, like the high-low passes. We didn't really see that much of this year for whatever reason. They finally figured out that, you know, hey, we have this size advantage, and we can run this little high-low with Powell in the high post, passing over the top to LaMarcus. So he got a few of those. He hit a few of his turnaround jumpers, which is always a good sign for the Spurs. He was in there rebounding in the paint. You know, those are the main things. That's where he scores anymore. But really the biggest thing is, you know, defensively, they've been strong. They were pretty stingy in their pick and roll defense, which is not something they've been known for this year, but that was really where they stood out. I mean, LaMarcus and Powell both have stepped up big the last two games, defensive rebounds and block shots. So that's the biggest thing. And LaMarcus has a bad habit of swiping down a little bit, but he got away with it a few times in game three, got some clean strips. He's got to be careful, but there again, I mean, if it's Capella rolling, as long as you don't give up the wide open lob, you know, fouling him isn't the worst thing because he's not a terrific free throw shooter. But I think you just want to make them try to finish over outstretched hands because Spurs do have the size. So, you know, try to make them finish and try not to give up wide open threes. And it seems like that's what they're doing. Grant Hill pointed that out on NBA TV post game that it's very similar to the way the Spurs played his sons in the 2000s. Trying not to leave the shooters wide open. They tried to make Nash a scorer and try to make Nash and Amari beat you. Now they're trying to make, you know, Capella and Harden beat them scoring, but not leave those shooters wide open. I think Houston still got some wide open looks. Spurs can do a better job, but I like the strategy.
Yeah. So now we need to talk about the other big development from the series. Tony Parker, he went down, I think it was in the fourth quarter of game two. And then had a torn left quad tendon. He is out for the playoffs, and we don't know how long or how much longer. It could be, you know, beginning of next season as well, which we'll talk about once we have a better sense of. But in his absence, DeJounte Murray moved into the starting lineup, scored 2 points in 14 minutes. Patty Mills, it seemed like he was basically the de facto starting point guard, had 15 points on 4 of 14 shooting in game 3. Pop has already said they're keeping the same starters for game 4, so Murray's still going to start. I guess he likes Patty Mills' offense off the bench, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, how important do you think Parker's absence is moving forward?
It's really important. I mean, the Spurs are built to kind of just, you know, keep rolling with whoever they lose, but I mean, that's something that they've kind of been lacking all year, is that guy to break down the defense, get in the paint a little bit, and find people. And Tony was doing a really, really good job of that throughout the postseason thus far. Mm. Not only that, but he was hitting his threes. He was scoring, I think, 15 or 16 a game, even with one scoreless outing. So he was playing really well. And just the one thing that he always had, even, you know, throughout the season when he wasn't necessarily scoring a lot, was that he just knows the offense so well. He even honestly works his butt off on defense. That doesn't always work out for him, but, you know, he knows where he's supposed to be. So I think they're just going to miss that more than anything. But DeJounte, he really got thrown into the fire. Patrick Beverley, right off the bat, stripped him several times. I expect he'll be a little stronger with the ball, I hope, tonight. But he's very slight-framed, you know. It's gonna be hard for him. But, yeah, and honestly, I mean, you said Patty Mills. I never called him Patrick before. That was weird. Kind of the de facto point guard, and honestly, more than anything, it's Kawhi. Kawhi's controlling the game. So the only kind of okay thing about it is you get to see that, but I'm really just disappointed for Tony. You know, he deserved to get to finish out this postseason the way he started it, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But just wish him a full recovery.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, you gave Tony, or I guess you and I both did, we gave Tony the kiss of death before the Memphis series, and then he proved us both wrong, so it was a bummer. You know, I only saw from afar that he had gotten hurt, and then think I saw it in the airport coming back from Sydney that he actually had a torn tendon. So yes, all of us
really,
wish
really
him.
Strange.
Yeah.
It's like he didn't even plant on it. You know, I thought at first it was his right knee because that's where he really landed. But it was his left knee, and he kind of like drug it sideways, and I think maybe that's where it happened. But it was just weird, you know. He's done that teardrop thousands of times in his career, you know. And it's just that one. It was a teardrop. Yeah, just that one freak landing.
Yeah, I talked to Alex because, you know, we both heard he couldn't put weight on the knee. We immediately assumed ACL, but then once the diagnosis came out, she just cringed because it's not a fun one. It's a pretty painful injury, which makes sense based on it sounded like he had to be carried off the court. And so, yeah, best wishes to Tony. Hope he gets back next year because we would like to see more vintage Tony, especially in the playoffs. Mort, I do want to ask you about Lou Williams, because you and I were both really high on him when Houston picked him up at the trade deadline. Looked like he was pretty, you know, not like 30 points in game one, but he played pretty well. But the last two games, he's been invisible. So how does Houston get him going?
You know what? I don't really think that Lou is one of those guys who's going to get open by a team making adjustments. He's one of those confidence players who creates his own chances and needs to kind of dribble himself into a rhythm before he takes a shot. So maybe the only game plan is to let Lou be Lou a little bit. Like, you simply give him the ball and say, you know what? Just take a couple possessions, that's all yours, where you have all the creative freedom, see what happens. I think really that's the only shot, because they're passing the ball extremely well. Everyone seems to be getting wide open looks, and he's out there getting those same looks, but he's passing them up and just looking not very comfortable. So I think it's a confidence issue.
Okay, that's good to know. And then it looked like, Harden had, 43 points in game three?
Yeah.
They still lost by, I think they ended up losing by double digits, or, you know, they kind of
11.
Broke it open in the end. So do you think, at this point, do you think the Spurs are okay with letting Harden go off as long as they stop, you know, the guys like Trevor Ariza, Lou Williams, Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson?
Oh, absolutely. That's why they lost game one, was because everyone participated. Like, I think they went 22 for 50
Ooh.
From outside the arc. And here's the thing, like, this really bothered me, because on Twitter and, you know, everywhere, people were like, well, the Rockets just got hot, and, you know, you can't stop them when they get hot. This wasn't really a question of them getting hot. They were getting wide open freaking looks all game long. Like, they were just outpassing, you know, the Spurs, and just, you know, just slaughtering that defense. They got threes all over the court. Everyone was involved. So that was like a united front that just, you know, hammered the Spurs. So obviously they needed to change up their game plan, and now they are targeting, you know, the role players, the guys who make all those three. Like, shut them out and just let Harden get 60. Let Capella get 25. Doesn't matter. Just let each and every one of them, you know, the shooters, just take them out of the ball game. So yeah, I think they are satisfied. And well, to San Antonio's credit, I thought for sure that Kawhi's point total was going to go down, because I thought he would be so in tune defensively. Like, that would be his strongest game plan, was be, you know, you're gonna have to take Harden, you're gonna have to close out on Ariza. Sometimes you're even gonna guard like Eric Gordon or Lou Williams or whatever. And he's done some of those things, but he's still putting up 27 a game and doing so at a true shooting percentage of 68. And he's also averaging 9.3 boards and 7 assists. Wow. So, like, in this series, granted, small sample size, 3 games, people who are complaining about his lack of all-around game can just shut up, really, because he's proving here that he has it. He's always had it. It's just a question of now it's needed, now it's necessary. And he's stepping up. It seems like whenever he's asked to step up, he does that again and again, and even more so than the last time. He improves upon it every time he's asked to step up. He is Like, can we all agree that he and LeBron are by far the best players in this postseason? Like, I don't know how you rank them, if Kawhi is one or LeBron is two or the other way around, but those two are, like, they are right there alongside each other. There's a huge drop-off to whoever's third. Like, it's amazing. Those two small forwards are just owning the league right now.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to talk to you guys since that Memphis Spurs game four, but that game was just, like, his tour de force of, like, you guys don't think I'm the MVP? I'm going to keep hitting shots. I'm going to single-handedly will my team back into this one. Yeah, he's been... he's just so fun. So
that was his Reggie Miller in the Garden moment.
Yeah, that was... I mean, God, even though they lost that game, it was like, they're not losing that series because Kawhi can do that. It's just like... I don't know how, you know, you can win the game, but that's going to break your spirit over the long haul. So, Sarah, what's your, I'm guessing, actually, I don't know, because you're a Spurs skeptic. Who did you have winning this series before it started, and what's your updated prediction now?
Oh, I just hate to make predictions concerning them, but I did have, I said Spurs in six. I think I would stick with that. They cannot turn the ball over like they did in Game 3. They were very fortunate. It's kind of crazy to me that the Rockets actually had, I think, their fewest fast break points of the series in Game 3, and the Spurs turned the ball over 21 times.
Wow.
So, that's interesting. But I would stay with that. I also, like you guys were talking about Kawhi, Morton and I kind of talked about, well, is he going to guard Harden the whole time, or what's going to happen there? Are we probably going to take breaks? And I thought it was going to be a lot of, you know, him and Danny Green passing him off. But the last two games, he has pretty much been the primary guy on Harden from minute one. And so I just wanted to point that out and give him credit because, yeah, he's now stepped up to leading the team. I think he's led the team in, like, points, assists, and rebounds almost every game. And he's guarding Harden every possession, so.
I don't understand, like, where he has the stamina.
I don't either.
Yeah. Oh, to be 25 again. Mort, who do you have in this series moving forward?
Well, I had Spurs in seven, and I'm going to stick with that simply because I think some of the things that Kawhi is doing right now isn't really sustainable. He's shooting 57% from downtown. I mean, that sort of efficiency I don't think is going to hold up. He only has six turnovers for the whole series, despite playing 111 minutes, taking 50 shots and 21 assists, I mean, and handling the ball to the extent that he does. Six turnovers, I don't expect that to improve, or improve, I don't expect that to remain the same. So his level of play, I imagine, I think he's going to go down a little bit, because after all, I do believe at the end of the day that he is human, maybe, possibly. Maybe. And then I don't trust LaMarcus at all, even after the 26-pointer. And then I think Tony Parker losing him, like, the first time around, you can get a win off of losing him, like, you know, everyone's coming in, like, we gotta win this for Tony, we're gonna do this. You know, that motivation is not gonna stay there.
Yeah.
I don't think so. And Deontay Murray is still a rookie. Then you have Patty, who's gonna have to play extended minutes. I'm not sure that that's something that he's all that used to, at least not in this case. So, and also Manu has really struggled, and I don't expect him to bounce back a whole lot. It seems like he's really having a rough postseason. So there are definitely some drawbacks with this old San Antonio team that I'm very worried about. So seven games, but I still think they're going to manage.
I like it. See, I would have definitely said Rockets in six before the series started, because I basically thought game one would happen four times. I just thought they had too many weapons, and You know, Kawhi and Danny can shut down two of them, but I figured Pau and LaMarcus defensively would have problems closing out on, especially when they play four or five shooters. But now I'm starting to think that Pop versus Mike D'Antoni is the biggest mismatch in the series. So for that reason, I would go Spurs in six now. But I have no confidence in that pick. It would not surprise me if it went 6-7, or if Houston won.
This is why I have Greg as my coach of the year.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Yeah, I mean, he's you know, when I saw that they lost by 30 in game one, I just said a prayer for the Spurs coaches because I figured they would not be leaving their offices until game two. And, you know, based on the turnaround, it seems like that's what happened. So we'll see what happens in game four. And it is in Houston, so maybe Houston's, you know, the role players tend to play better at home. So maybe they get hot, but I think we can all agree with, well, maybe, Sarah, you probably do not want the series to go long, but
no.
More, you and I, I'm sure, would like to see go seven.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the other two series now, neither of which are nearly as exciting. Cleveland-Toronto, Mort, our hot take that the Raptors are making the finals is, it's on life support again, and this time I don't think it's coming back.
I don't remember ever saying that.
There's a reason it's called a hot take, folks. It's not likely to happen. I'm sticking with my Wizards one, but
we should really learn because you and I, we often look ridiculous, and yet we continue like dropping hot takes all the time. You know, we look at each other. We know we're going to regret this, mm-hmm. and we keep on doing it. We need to get smarter, Brian.
I mean, Skip Bayless makes like $6 million a year doing exactly that. So.
Oh, that's right. That's our strategy.
Right.
I like it. Yeah.
It's the $6 million man strategy. So. Based on what I've seen from the box score, it just seems like LeBron James is the best player on the planet, and he's reminding us of that consistently. Kyrie Irving also, he had a playoff career high 10 assists in game one and 11 in game two. Kyle Lowry has an ankle injury, missed game three, and he sounds doubtful for game four. DeMar
DeRozan just isn't that good.
Right. He went scoreless in game two? Or no, he didn't hit a field goal.
Or
right?
Wait, that wasn't it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was something like that. I don't remember. He had a hard, you know, really tough game.
Yeah.
I more or less just glanced over this series because I sort of feel bad for Toronto. It just feels like a whooping. Just like one of those, you know, I'm back in the 1950s and I stole something from the fridge and my dad caught it and now he's taking out his belt kind of whooping. And I just feel so bad for Toronto at this point.
Yeah.
They are getting slaughtered.
And so is it just, like, they just have no answer for LeBron? I saw DeMar offered $100 to anyone who could figure out a way to stop
him. Does
that
feel really cheap to anyone else? Like, I'm insulted by that offer. Right, you have a lot more than $100 laying around. Come on.
True.
To guard LeBron?
Yeah. Put a couple, you know, 3-4 zeros on that one. Yeah. Maybe.
That's true. He did just sign, what, like $125 million contract? Oh, yeah, $140 million, right.
I think it was $145 or $146 million. Yeah. So, you know, Lord knows he can afford it. But to answer your question, no, you know, right now nobody is stopping LeBron. He is hitting from everywhere, like shooting 60% from the field, over 50% from downtown, averaging 36, 8 boards, 5 assists. He's playing a hell of a lot of minutes, though. I'm kind of wondering if that's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I feel they're kind of pushing their luck a little bit. Like, he's averaging almost 40 minutes a game in this series, which really isn't necessary when you look at how the games have, you know, gone.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he's right now, he's just, you know, putting up that middle finger to the rest of the NBA and to all us, you know, podcasters and whatnot. Like, I'm still here.
Right. It's the yearly tradition of we fall in love with someone during the regular season. And this year it was Russ and Kawhi and Harden. Mm. And then come postseason, LeBron's like, hey, guys, I'm still the best player on the planet.
Yeah.
Like, don't forget it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, it sounds like Lowry said he's probably going to miss game four. Sarah, is there anything the Raptors can do to stave off elimination if Kyle Lowry misses that game?
I mean, they were, like, relatively close last game, weren't they? At points.
Think closer than...
Yeah, I mean, it's sad.
Just a 21-point loss.
It's, right. Yeah, it's sad because it's like the Warriors. Like, I want to say, like, that series with Utah has been relatively close, but there's a different standard with those teams. It's like, if you keep them sort of, like, within 10 for most of the game, you were close.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I mean, Kojo had a rough game last game. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be better in game four. It's just, they just need a little bit more than what they're getting. They're getting next to nothing from Damari Carroll. I don't know what's going on there. He hardly played last game. Yeah, and they're up against LeBron, like they said. What I think it was Lowry who said, you know, they have LeBron and nobody's closing the gap on him.
Mm.
So, yeah, the truer words were never spoke. I mean, yeah. So, I do love the $100 offer, though. Yeah. Somebody said, Kawhi Leonard costs like $17 million this year, so. I can't tell you how bad I want that finals again. I just wish that the Warriors didn't exist. Like, can we just give them their own trophy and tell them to go away and right. just watch a finals that we might enjoy? I know some people are looking forward to Cavs-Warriors round three, but the longer the playoffs go on, I'm really not anymore, as well as LeBron has played. It's just those darn Warriors. I don't see anybody slowing them down.
Yeah, Spurs-Cavs round... Well, I guess this would be round two after 2007, but yeah, like Spurs very different. LeBron round four or five would be a treat. So is PJ Tucker, is he not doing anything against LeBron? Because that's, I remember at the trade deadline, we thought he would actually be a big piece to help them, you know, with like Carroll, Tucker, maybe DeRozan, maybe some Norm Powell. But I'm guessing.
You remember Gerald Wilkins back in the day?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he came into that series, I think he was a Cav by then, and he was billed the Jordan stopper.
Mm-hmm.
It was up against Michael and the Bulls.
Yeah.
And Jordan took it personally.
Oh, no. Oh,
yeah.
No. That's...
It has that sort of feel to it.
Okay. So LeBron's just annihilating PJ Tucker every time?
He's annihilating everyone.
Oh,
it's
good. Okay.
It's uncanny. Let me give you guys a little number here, which I think... this isn't about LeBron specifically. This is just about the team dominance. Toronto has taken just 16 more three-pointers than the Cavs have made.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well... That sums up that series. So here's my question about the Raptors then. And we could talk more about this next time when they're officially eliminated. But hypothetically, say they do lose game four. What's next for them? Because now Kyle Lowry and Ibaka are both free agents. This was basically the Ibaka and PJ Tucker trades where they're all in push. Because they don't have... I mean, if they re-sign Ibaka and Kyle Lowry, they're not going to have cap space to add... anyone else of major value unless they get, like, you know, a Joe Johnson on a discount deal or David Lee or someone, like a veteran ring chasing, basically. But they don't have the cap space to sign anyone else. So if their ceiling is, you know, wherever we meet LeBron, we're going to get swept or we're going to get knocked out in five games or six games, does that affect how you go into this offseason, what you're thinking if you're Masai Ujiri?
Not if that's the idea, like, right. Oh, LeBron is going to kill us. But, you know, if they continue to go into the postseason and routinely struggle, like they always seem to do, if this pattern reemerges every single year, then that is going to be that's going to have to be the reasoning for splitting this team up. You can't really say, oh, LeBron is there, so we might as well, even though I get the logic. Like, I understand that teams right now are rebuilding because they are looking at the Warriors and going, well, for the next 5 years, we can rebuild.
Right.
I get that, but when you have a team that is continuously fighting for Eastern Conference Finals appearances, then you got to keep that ship moving.
Mm-hmm.
However, this is like the third year in a row that the Raptors have stunk up the joint in the playoffs. Like, low efficiency. The fact that they can't shoot has proven once again accurate and made it really a tough game for them. That it seems like every single game is really a scrap to survive mentality they have to take on. I'm not even sure how they beat Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I look back at that series and I'm still like, how did that even happen?
Yeah.
So at this point in time, even though I agree with everything they did, like getting PG, getting Serge Ibaka, like going all in, I love their idea.
Yeah.
But it didn't work out. They are getting killed because of all those problems they had before that reemerged. So now I am flipping it around for my, at least from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
it's time to do something else. If that means not re-signing Kyle Lowry, who is, I believe, what, 31? Something like that, 31, 32. And not re-signing Serge Ibaka and trading DeMar DeRozan to whoever is willing. Look, I get it. 27-point-a-game score is should supposedly have high value, but if you can't deliver in the playoffs for three straight seasons, your value is going to decline. Sure. So get that contract off the books. Get DeMar Carroll off the books for whatever the hell you can take that isn't a worse deal, and then rebuild. You know, you have one of the sharpest GMs in the biz right there. I mean, Lord knows if anyone's up for it, Masai Ujiri is.
Yeah. Sarah, but, Sarah, do you feel the same way, or do you think they should roll it back and hope LeBron finally ages a little bit next year?
I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing, but I tend to agree with Morton. Those are actually the two guys that I was going to say try to move on from, but it's easier to say, you know, because obviously, yeah, the value isn't going to be great right now for Carroll or for DeRozan, but I'm sure somebody would roll the bones on DeRozan.
Oh, the Lakers would in 0.3 seconds. Yep.
So,
well, we don't know, though. Give it we a don't shot. Really yeah, know yeah. like the tendencies of Rob Pelinka.
That's true.
That's true.
Like, but, you know, the Knicks would.
Yeah, DeRozan's a LA kid, though, right? And I
know, but like,
yeah,
you know, the Knicks, you could probably get like a fair haul from the Knicks because, look, James Dolan, this is a 27 point per game scorer. Right. You can market him.
Yeah.
Oh, well, then I'm going to have to send him one of my CDs.
I mean, they are looking to move Carmelo.
Right?
That's interesting.
I'll do that.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Yeah. That,
yep.
Okay. So
I'll start Norman Powell.
Right. Yeah. I'm kind of with you guys. I'm with you, Mort, in that I loved what they did. I think this was the time to go all in because Lowry is about to be a free agent and you don't know that you're going to get another chance with this core. But it does seem, you know, I wouldn't hate it if they roll it back because, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe Ibaka with a full season under his belt, maybe they realize, you know, start off with him at the five right away. It seems like Dwayne Casey's kind of been shifting his lineup from game to game at this point. And like JV is going in and out of the starting lineup. So maybe you figure out a way to better maximize both of those players if you have more time with them. But I do think there's at least some argument, you know, that if this is the ceiling for this team, you know, it's kind of the same thing we've talked about with the Clippers before. Like, do you want to get locked into that core and just, you know, it's great to be in the second round every year, for sure. Like, most teams would kill to be that far. But does this team have championship upside? Based on what we've seen this year and the past couple of years, it's becoming harder and harder to argue that.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Right.
Like, because you and I mean, we were drinking the Kool-Aid for a little bit.
Hell yeah.
And look, they're a fun team.
Yeah.
Like, they are also a team that you could easily love.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't have that one guy who goes around, you know, talks back to the ref and, you know, is flopping a whole lot. Like, they're good, high-quality guys who are, you know, high-character guys, I should say. And they're all immensely talented. Like, DeRozan, even though we crap on his shooting, is brilliant. His footwork is beautiful. Mm. His mid-range game is absolutely outstanding. Kyle Lowry, one of the more dynamic guards in the whole game. Valanciunas, like, this season, or this series alone, he's been pretty good. He's not been playing a whole lot. His defense has been a little bit off, but he's scoring at a high rate. He's rebounding well. Like, he is a skilled player. It's just a matter of mixing everything up. Maybe if, I'm just going to air it, maybe a different coach.
Mm-hmm.
It could be Dwayne Casey, potentially, because 3 years in a row with this kind of talent, it might be time to look at the bench and say, you know what, we need a change.
Mm-hmm. Fred Hoiberg.
I'm just not...
He's available.
I'm not sure why you would want to downgrade us.
Right.
But, you know, a Jeff Van Gundy?
Mm.
Defensive-minded, he would get a lot out of Ibaka. He would more than likely, you know, be able to take Jonas under his wing and get the big fella going because Jeff is a guy who can get big men going. Like, he coached Yao as well,
yeah.
So he knows like how to utilize that.
That's true.
And Patrick Ewing, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Van Gundy, you know, on Toronto, I wouldn't hate that.
Yeah.
Even though it's been, what, 8 years more since he's coached? I don't know.
Right.
It's
right.
been a while.
Yeah.
But since, I mean, I would probably roll that dice.
Yeah, so we'll talk more about Toronto's future probably next week, because I'm assuming they will no longer be in the playoffs as early right. as later today.
And you won't be high as a kite.
Right. Yeah, I might have readjusted to American time by then. All right, let's move on to the last series. Equally unexciting, Golden State, Utah. The Warriors are up 3-0. Seems just like Kevin Durant and Stephen Curry are good at basketball. Who knew? And Draymond Green's still good, too. I guess Klay Thompson doesn't seem like he's been playing all that well this series, and it doesn't matter. George Hill missed games 2 and 3. He's had big toe soreness for, like, much of the year. Missed a bunch of games during the regular season. Missed games 2 and 3 with that as well. As far as I know, his status is uncertain for game 4, but I can't see Utah pushing him. You know, he's about to be a free agent. I doubt he's going to want to risk exacerbating the injury if they have very little chance of coming back in this series. So, Sarah, assuming Hill does miss game 4... I'm going to ask you the same question I did about the Raptors. Are there any adjustments that Utah can make to at least stave off elimination for one game?
You're going to get basically the same blank stare you got last time. No, I think George is really important, honestly. And that's, I think maybe if he plays either of the last two games, maybe they steal one of those. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I do want to tip my cap to Utah because they're doing kind of what I thought they would. Honestly, they're playing the Warriors well, about as well as you can. They've kind of slowed the Warriors down. They've limited them somewhat. I think the biggest issue is, you know, when they've been close, as in the last quarter of, I think it was a 2-point game going into the fourth quarter last night, game 3 in Utah. I just think that maybe they don't really know how to close right now, and I mean having to do it against the Warriors is a tall task, but I just think, you know, you saw that even a little bit in the first round against the Clippers. They kind of in closing time did a lot of the ISO Joe thing, and I don't know that they really know what else to do. I think George would help a little bit with that if they let him have the ball, but that's kind of their problem. And then on the other end, you've got the Warriors, who Morton and I talked about last week. It's kind of the thing we don't talk about as much, but their fourth quarter defense clamps down and suffocates you. So
yeah,
I think that combined with the fact that I think the Jazz are still kind of figuring out how they want to close games has really been the thing that separated the two. But the Warriors are not smoking them. So I want to give the Jazz some credit for that. They are playing well. I just think they need George Hill. That's a really important piece to their puzzle, and you saw that all year. But that added length, that added experience, playoff experience, you know, that would be really, really nice to have.
Mm-hmm. So, Mort, I'm going to ask you the same question I did about the Raptors. Let's assume the Jazz do get swept. Do you think George Hill's absence gives them reason to roll back this same core? You know, Hill and Hayward are both going to be free agents after this year. Do you think they see, you know, Hill's absence as like, hey, you know, we didn't have our full strength squad and we're not getting totally annihilated, so let's everyone re-sign here. We have a real chance to beat this Warriors team if everyone is healthy. Or do you think this sends a message like, oh, the Warriors are just too good, everyone go run to the Eastern Conference where you can, you'll run into the LeBron, but that's it?
No, I think they have every reason to roll everything back because they're on the uptick.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And good Lord, I'm going to say it, they have the league's best center. So I think that's a huge thing. Gobert was 7 of 15 from the free throw line last night, which was obviously not good, but he is a better free throw shooter than that, and if he had hit like his regular season percentage, I think the Jazz would have been able to get enough leeway in terms of their lead, and I think they would have kept it, and I think they would have won.
Mm.
You also have to remember that Rodney Hood and Joe Johnson played about as bad as you could be. Mm-hmm. I mean, they scored a combined 10 points on 20 shots. Oof. That's, yeah, that was horrific. And you're not gonna, you know that Rodney Hood is not going to go 1-for-8. Like, overall, he's a lot better than what he showed last night. And he does have his games where, you know, he's not that consistent, but he's still young. Mm-hmm. When he is developed a little bit more and he can play alongside Gordon Hayward and take more of that offensive load off him, I think they're going to get so much better.
Yeah.
And especially, and think about it, Gobert isn't done developing.
No, not at all. Yeah.
So I definitely love this Jazz team, and I see no reason whatsoever to blow it up. Having said that, if Gordon Hayward like signs with Boston mm-hmm. or something, which I don't anticipate, but if it does, if he does, then yeah, then there's no reason to bring back George Hill at least.
Yeah,
because then you will need to start like not a complete rebuild, but you would need a retooling process.
Mm-hmm. And you can like trade Derek Favors away and build around Hood and Gobert, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. I mean, it's tough because I feel like with the Raptors, the choice is probably more in their court than for Utah. Like, if the Raptors offer max deals for Lowry and Ibaka, I don't see those guys saying no. Whereas Hayward, you know, maybe he does really want to go back to Brad Stevens. I'm with you, Mort. I think that whole thing is overblown, and it seems like he's happy in Utah, and it would not surprise me to see those guys all wind up back there. But it does feel like Utah's in a little bit more of a precarious situation just because Hayward is going to be one of the most desired free agents this summer. He's going to get maxed everywhere. George Hill, you know, Utah tried to extend and negotiate him, or renegotiate and extend with him. They couldn't reach an extension by the deadline. We don't know how much money he's going to make this summer. It could be up to a max, which is, then you're starting to get a little pricey.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Because he's not a spring chicken anymore. I think he's also 30 or 31. So, yeah, it's an interesting time for Utah. Sarah, I want to ask you this because it could affect your Spurs in the next round, potentially. Steve Kerr is still out indefinitely. It sounds like he just had surgery Friday, or like a spinal tap procedure, some sort of procedure where they drained his spinal fluid because he's having complications from the surgery he had a couple years ago. If he does have to miss the rest of the playoffs, how much, if at all, does that affect Golden State's chances of winning the title?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it really affects it at all. You'd love to be able to have him around, obviously, and I feel just terrible for the guy that he seems to be in pretty constant agony. But, you know, Mike Brown, people have pointed out, he seems to not hesitate to go to that death lineup even more often than Kerr, which I don't know. You can look at that as that helps their chances. I don't know how. I mean, I suppose it could hurt them if it wears them down a little more, but he's not like overplaying them. So I don't know. I mean, I would worry a little bit about his game-to-game adjustment, but the thing is, people are still having to adjust to the Warriors, so I don't know that they're really going to be required to adjust that much to anything they face. So yeah, I don't think it really hurts them that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, I like what Kerr brings to the table. It seems like he has a really good pulse of the team, but at a certain point, you just have so much talent on that team. I feel like they can almost coach themselves. So, you know, best wishes to Steve Kerr, obviously. It sounds like Bob Myers, what he talked to the media, I think, today, and basically said, we hope we can have him back sooner than later. So it seems like maybe there's still at least a chance that he comes back during the playoffs at some point, but his timetable is very much uncertain. So until we know more, just wanted to send best wishes to Coach Kerr and hope he gets better soon, because, yeah, that does not sound fun. Okay, let's talk about a few of the other happenings throughout the association among the non-playoff teams. I think you guys briefly mentioned this last week, but I want to bring it up again in the context of a soon-to-be free agent. Larry Bird stepped down as the Pacers president. I think this was last week. So, Mort, what do you think this means for Paul George? Because, you know, we mentioned he's a free agent in 2018. There were at least speculation that he might be traded at the trade deadline. Then they get waxed by Cleveland in the playoffs, yeah. And he's throwing shade left and right during post-game press conferences. Do you think this increases the chances of him being traded, decreases the chances, or it has no real effect?
Bye-bye Birdie means bye-bye Georgie. That's where I stand. I don't think Paul George is going to stick around. Well, we know he's not going to stick around. I think he's going to get traded because, you know, they're not going to try to lose him for nothing. Mm-hmm. They're going to get, like, 15 cents back on the dollar.
Yeah.
They know that. We all know that. But 15 cents beats nothing.
Right.
So I'm not sure where he gets sent. I could imagine that he would give them a list of teams. Mm-hmm. And then they would try to figure something out, short of like Carmelo. And the thing is, though, I could suspect that George would just like say, you know, it's the Lakers or nothing. Which would really force their hand. Because then what do you do?
Well, he doesn't have a no-trade clause, does he? Like, he can't.
Well, no, but if he does that, and he makes it public as well.
Yeah.
Like, right. Because that's what happened with Melo as well. Mm-hmm. He kind of forced himself to New York. And being public in today's market is just huge because it drives down the price for everyone else. So, but, you know, I would probably consider it as well. Like, Brandon Ingram, good player, not really in love with him at all.
Mm-hmm.
But still, he's a piece that you can build with.
Yeah.
So if you're going to blow it up, why not get, like, Brandon Ingram, maybe Ivaka Zubac as well?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hell, why not? It's Paul George.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, depending on what happens at the draft lottery, the Lakers could have a top three pick coming their way this year as well, so that's one more chip in their trade ammunition.
Oh, they're not getting that up. You think so? I don't think they're giving that up at all.
If it was number three, I don't think they would.
Really?
Yeah, why not?
If you knew would he be coming your way in a year?
You can assume he will, but you can't. Nothing's official until he signs. Like, if he's an all-NBA player next year, then he gets an extra $70 million to stay in Indiana.
Still, though. I mean, we all knew that Dwight was going to go to Houston, like, all year long when he was in LA.
Yeah.
Because it just made so much sense, and there was a lot of buzz about it. And then George here more or less hinting that he wants to go home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I'm kind of thinking that would be too risky. If I'm in the Lakers, I would definitely keep the pick and then just wait it out and see what happens.
And only offer like Ingram, Zubac, Clarkson.
Right.
Would you throw in Clarkson?
Oh, that's good. Because now we're not at 15 cents on the dollar. Mm-hmm. Now we're at like 45, 50 cents on the dollar. I probably would if it came down to like we have to make it, you know, we have to make a decision like within the hour.
Yeah.
Then I'd be like, it's Paul George.
Right.
We got to do it.
Yeah.
And then hope for the best.
Yeah. I think so too. So we'll see what happens with Paul George. I think we'll know more probably. Even as soon as May 16th when the draft lottery happens, because if the Lakers get that pick, again, it's one more thing they can dangle in front of the Pacers' faces. Boston, too. You know, if Boston misses out on the number one overall pick, if they fall to 3 or 4, and, you know, that's probably Josh Jackson or Jason Tatum. So you've got a small forward heir apparent to Paul George there, if you want. It could be... Promises to be an interesting summer in Indiana, to say the least. The other big front office shakeup that we had this week was Atlanta. Sounds like Mike Budenholzer is still the head coach, but is no longer the team's president. Wes Wilcox, the former general manager, he was the general manager, he is now the former general manager. It is unclear. It sounds like he's staying in the organization in some capacity, but unclear exactly what he's going to be doing. Again, it's for them, they've got even a more imminent decision than Indiana, because Paul Millsap is a free agent this summer. Tim Hardaway Jr. is a restricted free agent this summer. again, what do you think happens with Atlanta? Do you think these changes affect, you know, what their offseason thinking is?
Well, it probably should, because they're not going anywhere. Paul is going to be 32 if he isn't already. He's still a fantastic player, like really fantastic. But you're not going to commit a long-term money to him at this point in time. At least I wouldn't if it's near the max. Like, what is that for? $140 million, something like that? More actually.
Yeah. If you do the 5-year max, it's more.
Oh, I wouldn't touch that. Mm-hmm. And he's probably, if he's opting out, it's to take like the big deal, mm-hmm. the one that he says this is a deal that I'm going to retire on afterwards.
Yeah.
I want no part of that. I will probably be interested in taking up offers on Dwight, and I'll re-sign Tim Hardaway Jr., assuming it's a decent price, because he's not like a max guy.
Oh, yeah.
So if someone maxes him out, then, you know, bye.
Yeah.
and you know, I like him. I really do, and I would match a large deal, but not something that's near a max, because that's ridiculous. I'm not sure about Schroeder. Like, he has some value. He's up and coming. He's young. He's becoming a not great, but a good point guard.
Mm-hmm.
Not defensively, though, but offensively speaking, he can pass, and he's become a much better jump shooter than we ever thought he would be, which is huge for his trade value.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe consider that as well, just blowing everything up. I'm not really sure what to do there. It's such a cluster F.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. I mean, they've made the playoffs for like 10 straight years, 10 or 11 straight years. So they're in that dreaded, it's not like the treadmill of mediocrity, because they're still making the playoffs every year, but
right.
It's the treadmill of having no ceiling, because you know this core, you know, a couple of years ago they were in the Eastern Conference Finals. They had the Teague and Korver and Dabari Carroll, and he was still good, that whole thing.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, they've got a totally different team. Sarah, I want to ask you about Schroeder in particular, because I know you're not a huge fan of him. I saw him throwing shade at Dwight Howard the other day, and I want to read this quote and then get your thoughts about it. So he was saying about Howard, on the defensive end, he has to show more effort. I have to show more effort. On the offensive end, the same thing. I don't know what it is. After practice, maybe, stay here for 20 more minutes and figure out what we have to do in the game. We for sure have to be better. So, with that in mind, what do you think the Hawks are... How should they be feeling about their plans this offseason? Do you think the Schroeder-Howard combination needs to be broken up? Do you think there's any coming back from that?
Were you wondering if that made me a bigger fan of his? So I think it actually helps, yeah. Because I'm not a huge Dwight Howard fan either, as you know.
Mm, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that really changes anything. But yeah, I mean, it's not super encouraging. But I just have more misgivings about both players just for their on-the-court value, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to clash because, yeah, they're going to have some issues as far as how they play, and they're not going to enjoy that. But, yeah, I don't like to I know that's part of what we do here. I don't like to criticize players too much, but I just don't think that he's a starting point guard, really.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have him as my starter. He's definitely got ability, and I think he's a really good guy off the bench, but I don't think I'd want him running the team. And then you got Howard, who, I mean, Schroeder's not wrong. Sometimes Dwight does not give the effort defensively that he's mm-hmm. capable of. Sometimes it's maybe because he gets disillusioned because he's not as involved offensively, and maybe sometimes that has to do with Dennis controlling the ball too much and chucking up bad shots. So, yeah, they both could work on it, and if they agree to over the summer and they're committed to that, that maybe it'll be all right. But, you know, you'd have to ask the Atlanta front office how much they believe that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like... I mean, who knows? You know, Dwight has this reputation of, you know, he's always had it. Like, he just coasts on his natural gifts. It's kind of the same thing that the perception that Shaq had, especially later in his career. Like, he doesn't put forth the effort that he, you know, he's not, like, busting his ass like LeBron, like, showing up at 6 a.m. every morning before everyone else and leaving after everyone else. Who knows if that's true, but that quote from Schroeder does not exactly inspire much confidence in their ability to forge a long-term working relationship together. So, we'll see what happens with Atlanta this offseason. I'm sure we will be talking about them plenty in the days and weeks leading up to free agency, especially once we get clarity about... Sounds like Paul Millsap is definitely opting out, but maybe we'll start getting a sense of how much, you know, which teams are interested, how much Hardaway Jr. is going to command. Because, Mort, when you said someone maxing him out, you sent chills down my spine. I thought I thought we learned from last summer. My God, that would be...
No. That's...
Yeah.
We didn't learn anything. By the way, is it me, or is the Dennis Dwight, you know, feud sort of like a cosplay version of Kobe Shaq?
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at it...
Yeah.
Like, you have that one guy who takes all these, like, long shots, like, off the, you know, when someone sets a screen, he goes off and he just shoots and chucks, and then you have the big fella under the basket, like, give me the damn ball, he doesn't get it, then he pouts and doesn't participate defensively, then the other guy gets pissed, and then it's just, like, all around circle. But the fact is that they are so far down on the charts as opposed to Kobe and Shaq. It's just like the cosplay version. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah,
it's
bad, like, cosplay. Like, yeah, did you put any effort into your costume at all? Like, no money, paper bag wearing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's almost irrelevant. Like, you know, most beefs, NBA beefs, like, warrants headlines, but you're like Schroeder and Dwight Howard, you're like,
eh, right. Like, whatever. Who cares? You know, yeah. Yeah. You guys aren't going to do anything anyway, so. That's fine. Right. Yeah. All right, let's talk about this other dysfunctional Eastern Conference franchise, the New York Knicks. ESPN.com's Ian Begley reported that several teams reached out to the Knicks to inquire about Kristaps Porzingis' availability after his well-known eruption at the end of the season when he skipped out on exit meetings and sent some veiled shots at the Knicks through every reporter who would listen. Mort, what do you think about this? Do you think, is Kristaps untouchable, or should the Knicks at least be listening to offers on him?
See, all right, I actually have a problem with this, because we are right now talking about a franchise that is so incompetent that we shouldn't really look at it in that, you know, through that perspective. We should look at it through Kristaps' perspective instead.
Okay.
Because, honestly, to answer your question, who cares what the Knicks should or shouldn't do, since they're so goddamn stupid at everything they do?
Right.
It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. We should look at, how does Kristaps get the hell out of there?
Yeah.
So we should hope that the Knicks would be listening to offers. We should hope that Kristaps is going, that qualifying offer, I know it's a risk, but let me get the hell out of here after my fifth year. I feel so bad for this kid being in a place that is just riddled with rotten tendencies, egomaniacs at in ownership levels that is just, you know, narcissistic isn't even the word. It's just, it's such a poor place for this beautiful unicorn to develop. So, for the love of Michael Jordan, let's hope that the Knicks are indeed that stupid that they are listening to offers, and let's hope that they are inclined to trade him for 5 cents on the dollar, because why not? Get him out of there right now.
Yeah.
Just find him a better home. I don't care. Put him up in a shelter. I'll adopt him. I don't care. Just get him out of there. And of course, you know, if I have to take it seriously, yes, they should look at him as the franchise player, because he's obviously going to be that for someone. But good Lord, what a situation, right? And this is what I am really frightened about. This could hinder his development.
Mm-hmm.
This could limit what he would ultimately become. Like, let's be honest, if you are a, what is he, 21? 20, 21?
Yeah, 21, I think. Or yeah, 21.
21.
22. Super
young. You're 21. Yeah, right, super young. You're 21,
you know, 7'3" power forward slash center with a unique set of skills. Mm-hmm. You have virtually every chance of not becoming Dirk, but mimicking his career in certain areas. You have every ability to become a better rebounder, better defender. You can run the floor. You can be that tier one superstar. But you're stuck in an organization that can barely figure out to, you know, probably, I don't know, synchronize their email accounts. It wouldn't even surprise me that that's the level we're at. Would you feel, you know, ready or committed to working your ass off to become better while wearing that jersey? I sure as hell wouldn't.
Yeah. Someone really should just make like an ASPCA commercial, but put Kristaps in instead of the sad dogs and cats. Like, please donate $20 a month to get Kristaps Porzingis on a real NBA team.
Yeah. Sarah McLachlan music. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, no.
Sarah, where do you stand?
Oh, we just gave SB Nation an idea.
Yeah, we really did. Mm. Sarah, where do you stand with Kristaps and the Knicks? Do you think they should be listening to offers on him, or should they just hang up the phone anytime someone says his name?
Honestly, they better talk to him, if they can even get a hold of him at this point.
Fair point.
Because, I mean, if he's that upset with them right now, and I guess listening to some offers isn't a terrible thing, but at the same time right now is probably not a good idea because people know that he's upset with you. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you have to ride it out at least this year, I would think, unless things just completely burn down over the course of the next season. But, yeah, it's just a shame. He's the one thing they've done right in years. So imagine, I mean, in a way, it might help set free the last remaining Knicks fans as well. If they got rid of him, they'd be like, you know what? Done.
Yeah.
But I do feel bad for them, though, because, you know, they do. They come into every year optimistic. I don't know how, but they do. They're like, yeah, this is the year, Knicks. And, yeah, every year it's a tire fire.
Yeah.
It's just...
I actually have a story about that because my best friend, he was in New York for about 6 months doing an internship, and he went to a Knicks game, and it was actually the game Derrick Rose didn't show up to because he traveled back to.
Right.
So that was against New Orleans, and Anthony Davis just went off. So right before the game, people were coming in, and they were, you know, hootering and hollering, yo, go Knicks, and whatever. Then, like, midway through the first quarter, it was like, oh, I remember who the Knicks are suddenly. And now it's just everything is bad, and boom here and boo there. It turned, like, so quickly. It was just like the starting lineup. Hey, let's go for our boys. Come on. Yeah, give it up. And then, like, 6-7 minutes later, oh, damn it, it's the Knicks. Like, what did you even know what you bought tickets for? Yeah. Like, yeah,
it's similar. So it sounds similar to the Philly fan, Brian.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. Especially the Eagles fan. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But this is the year.
Yeah, Super Bowl this year, man. And yeah, it's like game two. Boo!
Yeah,
sucks.
What's the bum? Yeah.
So question to you guys, because I actually don't know this. Mm-hmm. If Kristaps refuses to report to training camp, and he's under contract, mm-hmm. like, I know the Knicks can sue, I think they can sue him, right? Or whatever.
I would assume like, they would just fine him or, like, withhold his pay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, if he didn't report the whole year, would it still count as a year on his contract? Is that kind of what you're asking?
No, well, yeah, actually, because then if he did that and made no, like, secret, I don't even want to go back for another year, they would have to, like, decline his fourth-year option, right? Or at least try to trade him in the meantime.
I would, something. I don't know how that would work. I would assume, I wonder if that's ever happened, if there's, like, historical precedent, at least in the last, like, couple CBAs probably in the 60s and 70s.
I don't think there is.
Yeah, so I would assume that's... maybe the option rolls over and like he just wouldn't get like they would still have 2 years left on his deal, but I'm completely guessing. I have no real idea. I don't think it's gonna come to that point, luckily.
No, but yeah,
I think the NBPA would intervene. I'm sure Adam Silver would intervene. you know, you can't have one of your young unicorns withholding his services for a whole year.
Then that's the follow-up question, because if he intervenes, like, where does he intervene?
Yeah.
With Kristaps or with the Knicks? Because she should intervene with Knicks. The Knicks.
Yeah.
Because they're the run, they're the ones being, you know, run like a poorly constructed kindergarten.
Well, Jerry Colangelo can be available at any time. So I've heard
that was a weird
I've heard thing, that yeah. Adam Silver, when teams are being poorly run, tends to implement a Colangelo in the front office. So it seems like Jerry is long overdue to arrive with the Knicks and the Sacramento Kings. Which one gets it first? Who knows? I mean, just in general, you know, we've talked about this before. There are, I could maybe count on two hands, maybe even one hand, the number of guys who are like truly untouchable, right? It's LeBron, it's Curry, it's Kawhi, it's Kevin Durant, probably James Harden, probably Russ. Like, after that...
Giannis.
Yeah, okay, Giannis, yes. But after that, like, there isn't... I mean, Anthony Davis is as close to untouchable as you can get without actually being untouchable, but those injuries at least make him... like, there are very few guys who you should just not even remotely consider trading. Like, it hurts me to say this, but Joel Embiid is not in that camp yet because of his injury history.
Right, right. Like, well, obviously. Yeah. Yeah.
But if, you know, if someone called the Sixers and offered, like, a godfather mega deal for Joel Embiid, you have to at least consider it. And the same thing goes for the Knicks. Like, if someone, you know, if, I don't know, if Dallas wins the number one overall pick and offers Seth Curry and that number one overall pick and who cares what else? For Kristaps?
Yeah.
You gotta at least consider it, right? You don't necessarily have to take it, but it's, like, not outside of the realm of possibility. So, I don't think, you know, I would be very surprised if Kristaps Porzingis was not in a Knicks uniform come November 2017. But I don't think he's in the realm of an untouchable, you know, especially not yet. Like, he hasn't yet shown that he can be a number one option on a team, and he's, you know, this year he struggled with some Achilles injuries.
Yeah,
it's scary. It's not, you know, it's not Embiid scary, but he does have, it's not like he has a clean bill of health. Like, Karl Anthony Towns, I guess, is probably also, I'd probably put him in the untouchable camp. But
yeah, I was also remembering a couple of names, like, yeah, we could probably, yeah, two hands in this,
right? Right, right.
It's kind of necessary, but
the point being, I get your Kristaps is not yet at that level where, you know, a team calls the Knicks, says, hey, we're going to offer you this, like, ridiculous blockbuster offer. And the Knicks are like, nope, we're good. We're gonna keep the malcontent. Thank you. So.
Right, but if he refuses to report to camp, for example,
yeah,
his value is just down the drain. Like, already now, teams are calling because they are assuming that they could get him cheaper.
For sure. Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, but it's... Oh, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So
I really don't want to see him continue his career with the Knicks.
No, no.
Like, at all.
I don't think anyone outside of the New York metropolitan area does. So
yeah.
I'm sure the Knicks will be also on our tongues a lot this summer, especially, you know, Carmelo is gonna be
a Clipper.
Yeah, right. We're not even gonna touch that one for a while. But Kristaps is just yet another reason to keep an eye on the Knicks this summer. So that will do it for us this week at the NBA podcast. Wanted to thank everyone for joining us. Just a reminder, you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. You can find all three of our handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. Also, check us out on iTunes. If you're listening to this on Audio Boom right now, our iTunes link is at the bottom of the player. You can subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And again, we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports. So check us out there, at FanRag Sports on Twitter and at FanRag NBA for their NBA content. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. Have a good one, you two.
You too.
You too, Brian. Get some sleep.
Thanks, guys.